Emily, the one that has the Michigan shirt.
Oh,
like the top of your shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the side like this.
Give you the opportunity to find out a little bit about this ministry and all of its history, and as well as just all the different possibilities too. So I wanted to introduce you to Nancy, and Nancy will tell you a little bit more about herself and about, well, anything else that God lays on her. So here you go, Nancy.
First of all, I want to thank you guys for coming. We are so excited about having you guys here. Sure that God's going to do some awesome things through you guys, but hopefully also in you guys, because you're coming at a really exciting time. God has been doing some amazing things here, and so I don't think it's an accident that you're here, and we trust it's going to be a memorable week for you. I started Powerhouse, gosh, it's been about 23 years ago, I think. When I moved to this area, I found out that there was a prison here. And I found out that a lot of the families in Folsom, a lot of the people in Folsom were really scared of prison. And they didn't have anything to do with the families of the prisoners that moved here to be close to the prison, because they believed that if they made friends with the families of the prisoners, that when the guys got out of prison, that they would come to their house and do something to hurt them. And so what happened is that these families kind of, they were in isolation. Nobody would have anything to do with them. And at school, the children, nobody would invite those kids over to their house. They wouldn't allow their kids to go to birthday parties at children in prison houses. And so we have this kind of ghetto area of kids that were families of prisoners. And in these neighborhoods where they lived were also people that had been involved with crime, people that were addicted to drugs and alcohol, people that had mental illness. And so what we found was there were lots of kids that were growing up in homes where they really didn't have a functioning parent. Now, I know for you guys are in your teens, and sometimes you wish you didn't have a parent, huh? It'd be really cool to be on your own. But let me tell you, when you're this age and you don't have a parent, nobody's making sure there's dinner for you, and maybe there's younger siblings, you would find five-year-old children trying to run an entire household, where they were trying to take care of younger siblings because mom was passed out on the couch and dad was in prison. And so when those kids, they grow up to be like in junior high, nobody cares if they go to school. In fact, a lot of times their parents don't want them to go to school because they'd rather have them stay home and take care of the younger siblings. So you can imagine they've missed a lot of school. By the time they get to junior high, they feel like they're really stupid. And they get made fun of a lot because they don't have the right clothes, they don't have the right stuff. And so they feel really ostracized. So a lot of our kids would drop out of school because they were sick of being made fun of. They'd join gangs, they'd get in fights, and they'd start using drugs. So that's a lot of the kids that you're going to be meeting this week. And then you're going to be working with the younger children. And you'll see a lot of them, even though they look really young and innocent, if you talk to them a little bit, they may express things to you like, I'm really scared to be here tonight because my mom's drunk and I just left her home alone with my two-year-old brother. That's not uncommon to hear these kids say. They're starving for somebody that will pay attention to them. And we'll just tell them that they're cute or that the picture that they just made is beautiful. They just, because they don't have anybody like that. In fact, a lot of times their parents, their main thing that they say to them is just get out of the way. They don't want them hanging out with them. Now, what's happening here that's really exciting, we have groups that reach out to the families. We have a children's group that meets Sunday night. It's elementary age kids, and that's the kids that you guys are going to be working with. We also have a youth group that meets on Thursday nights, and you guys will get to visit that. A lot of our kids in our youth group are now homeless, because what's happened for them is they are sick and tired of following around mom, who's a drug addict, who keeps getting them kicked out of their apartment. They keep having to go to shelters. And by the time they get to junior high and high school, they say, you know what, especially if they come to know the Lord, they're like, I'm done with that lifestyle. I don't want that anymore. And so they go find a friend whose couch they can sleep on until their parents get tired, and then they go to the next couch, and the next couch. But in the last month, 60 of them have come to know the Lord.
That's awesome.
So that's really exciting. And you guys are going to get to be a part of that. Now, for a lot of them, they don't really understand how much their lifestyle needs to change because they've come to know the Lord. So you'll see a lot of mixture, you know, language and things like that. But they have hearts that want to know God. Mm-hmm. And they're just beginning to understand. So you guys will be able to meet some of them and maybe show them some of what God's done in your life. Then we're working also with the family. So a men's group will be here on Tuesday night, women's group, or Wednesday night. Women's group meets Wednesday morning. The adults that come to these are adults that, you know, kind of, most of them are really just kind of seeking God. They're like, you know what, I don't really like the direction my life's going. I think I might want to change it. Want to know more about God. Some of them have recently come to know the Lord, too. So you'll see that. So we have people at all different stages. Then we have a drop-in center that this little lady in here, I'm talking on the phone, every day from 9 to 4, we open our doors and people from the community can come in. Some of them are homeless. They just need food. We have a food closet. We'll give them food for the day because they have no way to keep it. Or they might come in because, you know, maybe they work at McDonald's. How many of you guys work at McDonald's with fast food? Okay, imagine working there. And you have three kids to take care of, and you have rent to pay, and one of your kids gets lice, and they can't go to school. So all week, you're having to pick nits out of their hair and wash everything in your house, and you can't go to work. You don't get any sick leave at McDonald's. So guess what? Now comes the end of the month, or the next month, you don't have enough money to pay your rent. And so now you're looking at being homeless with three kids. We have that. Lisa deals with that every day. People come in those kind of situations, and we try to help them to be able to pay their rent so that they can stay in their housing if they have a legitimate reason. We also have a doctor that comes in here that sees people that have medical issues, and we can pay for prescriptions and help them because a lot of times they don't have the money to make their co-payments. They can't get treated for even infections and things like that. So we do a lot of that kind of stuff, and sometimes we get people that are addicted to drugs, and they say, you know what, I want to get off drugs, can you help me find a program, or I need a job, or whatever it is. They come and see Lisa, and Lisa kind of figures out how you can help them out. Then you're going to be going over to what we call, well, first of all, I should say, the drop-in center, and our outreach programs are all done in this building, usually. And then you're going to be going over to PTC, you guys heard about that, the Powerhouse Transition Center, which is down the street, and that is where we house women and children. And they are women that have been homeless, addicted to drugs, and they want to change their lives. So when they come into our program, they are like, I will do whatever it takes to change. And they come in and live there for 2 years. 2 years, it's a long time. And they're in classes every day from 9 to 4, and they learn everything from, you know, what kind of food should I eat, to how do I take care of my kids, to how do I budget my money, and how do I walk with God, and how do I get free from this addiction that I have. So you'll meet the ladies over there, and they're awesome. God's done incredible things in their life. Now, this is kind of vacation time for them, so they'll be more available probably to sit and talk to you, but I encourage you to get to know them. They're some incredible ladies, and that God's done some neat things in their lives. So you'll be meeting them as well. And God's just been really growing this place. In the last few weeks, we've just seen some just powerful things. And I don't want you to get afraid, because sometimes there's some gnarly things that happen here. You know, last youth group, we had a fight, and we had the police cars and everything. But in the midst of that, but you know, it was really crazy, and we thought that what was going to happen was all the kids were going to go running outside to see what happened. But instead, they stayed inside and they prayed. And God, just his presence was there in such a powerful way. And in spite of all the stuff that was going on outside, God did some amazing things here. So you guys are going to get to be a part of that. And we're really excited. I know that Josh took some kids out in the neighborhood today. They passed out flyers about what you're doing. And I think we'll get a good number of kids, especially if we figure out a way to provide transportation. And you'll see that it'll build each day as word gets out in the neighborhood about how fine you guys are and how you're loving on them. And God will use you in great ways. So we're excited. It's been
been an amazing thing to see what God does, and I think you'll find that even if you don't know what to do, I think you can find it if you ask God to show you. He can still show you. I remember one night we had a kid that came in. He was about 7 years old. And we had set up all these craft tables, and it looked really interesting. And he came in, and the first thing he did is went over to every single table we had, and he just took his arm and went like this, and just cleared everything off. And then he started cussing at all the volunteers. And then the worship time started, and he said, "I hate this place. I can't stand it." And so I took him, and this is what you find. If you take kids that are acting up, if you take them one-on-one, I just took them on my lap, and I said, "So what's going on with you?" And he goes, "I don't like this place." And I said, do you know what this place is?" He said, "No." And so I started telling him about Jesus, and he said, "I don't care about your Jesus." He goes, "I just saw my uncle kill himself on my couch. I don't care about your Jesus." And I just went, "Oh my gosh," he's like 7 years old. And so I just held him, and I started to talk to him about how much God loved him and how sorry I was that he had to see that. Well, after that, just having me hold him and love on him, every week he was the first one out there waiting for the bus to come to our house. He never missed a week. He was up there singing in worship. All he needed was somebody that cared. So I don't want you to underestimate just reaching out to them, just smiling at them, just listening to them, praying with them, how powerful that is. You can actually change a life this week, and that could last for eternity. So we are excited with you. You may also get, you guys may be sleeping over there, I will tell you, and I don't know if anybody's warned you of this, you may get some homeless that come in that notice that you guys are here that want to hang with you, so I'll just let you know that. That's certainly a possibility, especially if we get some rain. So I'll leave that to Jackson's discretion.
I got my pot, they can sleep under it. As long as they don't mind a little gas.
But you know what, I will tell you, we know them all by name, and I don't know any of them that are dangerous. They're just, you know, they may be drinking, and you just have to tell them, you know what, this is for kids tonight. And they do understand that, because we have to do that with our youth and children programs. We have to say, you know, you can come on Sundays, you can come in dance group, but you can't be here when we have kids. So they know that, and they'll respect that.
So our answer is no, we have kids.
Yeah, you know what? This is a night for kids. Love you guys. If you guys have extra food and you want to send them off with it, you can, or whatever. But they may not bother you because they may not. They may stick their head in and not recognize you and move on. I don't know. I just want to prepare you. It could happen. So, anything else you want me to?
What is? And again, we'll talk more throughout the week. But what is one of? What are some of the biggest discouragements that you've experienced, and what are some of the greatest blessings that you've experienced?
I think having done this as long as I've done it, I've been able to see little children that we had in the children's ministry become adults and have kids of their own, and where they perpetuated the cycle. So maybe they were raised by parents that were addicts, and they haven't pulled out of that. And they're continuing to do the same thing. Now, that's also the greatest blessing, because what I've also seen is kids that were in our children's ministry or our youth ministry, they get older, they have their own kids, maybe they go to prison, and we have had many of them come into our two-year residential program because they remembered Powerhouse, they remembered the encouragement and the hope and the introduction to Jesus Christ that they had here, and they come back here later in life to get their life straightened out. And so I think that's really exciting. You'll meet Asia, who's one of our residents over there, and she was in our youth group. Kind of a fringe member, not a real, you know, entrenched, but she ended up coming in many years later. So I think it's kind of the same. One of the same.
Well, I saw Robert, and I didn't recognize him because he grew.
Oh, yeah.
I remember when you drove that van off.
That's right. That was Robert. Oh, that's awesome.
Well, you've been here before too.
I have a question. Where are we sleeping?
I think you're sleeping in there. Yeah.
Okay. I've got a question. You said like situation would arise, what would you do about the little brother?
Well,
yeah.
That was bothering me. I'm like, oh!
Yeah, you know, and if you have a situation like that, what you need to do is tell Jackson, and then Jackson will talk to us, and some of those things would be reportable to CPS, okay. Child Protective Services. Some of them would not be, and then we can help you make that call, you know, make that judgment.
Okay, like, yeah.
Unfortunately, what you do not know is that drug and alcohol abuse is not considered child endangerment. Unfortunately,
yeah.
That's true. Something bad has to happen.
They have to leave. Yeah, they have to. Yeah.
They have to do something dangerous.
Yeah.
And the really sad thing is nowadays, they rarely take a child, remove a child from a home, unless it's absolutely horrendous. Which means you have lots and lots of children growing up in situations that no child should ever have to live in. Which is all the more reason that we need to be here. We consider ourselves kind of a foster home for these kids without removing them from their homes.
So it's kind of like a home away from home.
It is. And for many of them, this is the only stability in their life. Because this is where they celebrate their holidays, they go on vacation with us. This is their extended family, you know, but it's what they know. And we've had kids that have grown up to be youth pastors. We've had, you know, we've had successes too, as well as failures. But it is hard because of the environment that they're in day after day.
So will all the kids that will be coming in, or like the majority of them, will be from homes that have family members in here?
About half of our kids have a family member that's incarcerated. But I would say 90% of our kids will come from a home where there's drug addiction. Now, there are some now that you'll have that whose parents have recently come to know the Lord. So you will have that too. And so some of our kids, in fact, you know, they're going to be the core because we have a Sunday night church service and they all know, they're all bringing their kids. So you will have a core of kids that have been coming every Sunday night, whose parents are now walking with the Lord, but they're still, you know, largely unchurched. So they probably won't know the right answers to questions you ask about, you know, the Bible. And if you tell Bible stories, it's going to have to be, you know, from the ground up, probably pretty much. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
One more thing is, last time when we were here, you guys kind of gave some guidelines as far as interacting with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I know something's probably changed, some things have probably stayed the same.
Mm-hmm.
What are your guidelines and recommendations for the next several days as we deal with the kids? What are things that we should do? What are some things that we should be aware of? What are some things that we should maybe stay away from?
I think the main things are you do not want to make promises that you can't keep. So you don't want to promise to be there next week or to, you know, to do something that you can't deliver on. That's really important because they have so much promised to them by adults in their life that they haven't lived up to. You don't want to give out your cell phone number or your address, anything like that. If they want to get in touch with you, they can get in touch with you through us, and we can contact Jackson, and he can get in touch with you if there's some kind of, you want to keep a relationship with a child, which is great. I just want to protect your safety, and because you don't know who the family is that you're getting involved with. We don't want you to bring a gift to a particular child. Don't give them money. Don't give them something just because it's not fair to the other kids, and we don't want to create a situation where the whole neighborhood now realizes that you have money and you'll be bombarded. If you hear something, you know, we have no food in our house, or we don't have electricity, or we're going to be, you know, on the streets, or whatever, something that's concerning to you, or my mom's beating me, or whatever, you need to tell Jackson or one of your leaders, and they will communicate that information to us, and we'll see what we can do about that, okay? So really, if there's anything you feel uncomfortable with, let your leaders know, and we will try to give you some guidance in that. The other thing, I would not ask if they have a parent in prison.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes parents don't tell their kids where the parent actually is. Now, they may offer that to you because they may be up at the prison every weekend. They may tell you, my dad's in prison and I go see him all the time. But that's something that we don't ask. Those are kind of the main ones that I can think of right now. Some more might come up during the week if I think of it.
Nancy, I have a question for you about, you said that you're one of the founding members here?
I'm the founder.
You are the founder?
Yes.
Where are your visible tattoos?
You know, I'll tell you what happened for me. I think when I really started getting serious about getting to know God and understanding His heart and spending a lot of time in prayer, the Lord just began to show me that there was this group of people that He loved and that He wanted to touch. And that the Lord wanted them to know that He loved them. And so I knew that there were families associated with the prison that lived in this community, and I started talking to my home group at church. I feel like God's calling me to do something with these families. I have no idea what to do. I've never known anybody in prison. I wouldn't even know how to start. And so one of the gals in my home group said, well, I know a lady who's leading Bible studies with wives and inmates. Here's her phone number. And that was really scary because it was like, oh no, now I actually have a phone number. Now I might really have to do something. So it took me a few, probably months before I called her up, and she said, honey, I've been praying for you for years. She goes, I'm getting too old to do this. Why don't you come and take over the Bible study I'm leading? And I said, well, I don't even know how to do this. You don't understand. She said, no, come. And she was leading a Bible study in the building that is now our transition center that you're going to be going over to, I guess, later tonight. And so I came into that Bible study, and I saw these women that were from a totally different culture than anything I had ever known. But it was like, when I walked in that room, it was like God said, this is where you belong. And I just knew it. And this lady, she was probably, and you be careful now, because I'm getting old, but she was probably about 70 years old. She had an auto harp. Do you know what that is? It's pretty funky. And she was leading worship with the auto harp. And, it was just totally not my thing, but I just loved these women. And about a month later, she walked out and left me with Bible study. And that was kind of how Powerhouse began. And I moved it out of the church building, because that was a church at the time. I moved it onto the streets, and God just started bringing the women. And then we had gang members that were who would hang out on the street right up here. And they would come and hang around the edge of the Bible study that I was teaching. And I started building a relationship with them. And God just grew it. I started inviting my friends. They got nervous about me hanging out with these people, and so they started coming with me, and one thing led to another, and I started praying for a building where we could do all of this, because we were trying to do it out on the streets, and it was cold, and sometimes it was rainy, and then the church that was down the end of the street went up for sale, and I began to pray that we would be able to buy that church, and so God gave us the money to buy it. We incorporated it as Powerhouse Ministries, and that's it. So I had no clue what I was doing, except, so thank God. So no, I don't have any tattoos. But you know what? God's been faithful.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You guys were blessed with a transitional house, right?
Well, it's that building that we were actually blessed with this building to move our offices and outreach programs to, so we could use that one for the transitional housing.
It houses just women and children.
Just women and children.
How many can you hold there?
That's a good question. We're supposed to be able to hold 20, but they cut us back to 10 because of the they decided we needed fire sprinklers. So we are waiting on our final inspection on our fire sprinklers, and then we'll be able to go up to 20.
Does that mean 10 altogether, including women?
Yes, and it's whatever mix we have.
Okay, do you guys also have a transitional house for men?
Not yet, but we're praying for that. And we want to have a youth center and housing for youth at the youth center, because we're finding more and more of a need to provide housing for our teens, particularly after they come to know the Lord.
And how long have you guys been voiced in having that house?
We've been doing that. Well, we started it as an emergency shelter back in 2000. And then we kind of morphed it into the program that we wanted. So the program that we're running right now, I believe, has been in existence for about 3.5, maybe 4 years.
And you said they make a 2-year commitment right off the bat?
Yeah. Yes, and it's tough because they're the first, about the first 9 months, they can't work. They have to just work on themselves. And so it's pretty intense.
So it's that long of a blackout period, pretty much?
It's not black. There's a 30-day blackout period where they can't go off-site or anything. But we want them to focus on their addictions and kind of learn how to be healthy before they have money in their pocket. Because one problem when you have an addiction is as soon as you get money in your pocket, you feel like you're healthy, and then you're tempted to go out and use. So we want to work on making them strong before they're out there in the workforce. So you'll see, like, Asia is one of our senior residents. Right now we have 2 senior residents there. We just had some people leave, and so we're kind of low right now. But Asia is a senior resident, so is Marla. You'll meet both of them. Cindy is a new resident, and then we have 2 others that we're working on bringing them back. They've had to be hospitalized, and so we're working on that restoration process right now. So we're really low right now. And then we have Lizzie, who's Asia's niece. She's 7 years old. She'll be in your program. And this is Emily. She's my foster daughter, and she'll be probably over there teaming up with you guys, too. So.
One more, and then we'll just go for the day. Mm-hmm. With, can you give us a little bit of background on the emergency housing, how that worked out?
The emergency shelter?
Yeah, when that started up and the story behind that.
Okay, we were seeing more and more homeless. We'd go home at night, and there would be homeless in our parking lot, and pouring rain, and all of us were really struggling with going to our nice warm homes while they were out in the cold. And the city was becoming more aware that there was a homeless problem, and they actually came to us and said, if we write an ordinance for you, would you be willing to house homeless? And we said, yes, we'd love to do that. So we opened up an emergency shelter, and we took anybody that was not, they could be intoxicated as long as they weren't belligerent or causing a problem. But what started happening is we had a lot of children that were there, and so we'd bring in these people, and dinner time, and all of a sudden a fight would break out in the middle of dinner. And I would see the terrified look on the women and children's faces because I knew they had been in abusive situations. And I just felt like, you know what? This is not a safe place. This isn't a good thing. And I think more and more my heart just began to be for a place for people that were really serious about making changes in their lives, where they could have a safe place to be able to make those changes. And so that's why we couldn't do both. We didn't have the funds to do both. And we just decided really wanted to, because we identified people during that time that really were serious, and we couldn't really help them. And so we decided doing one or the other, we were going to vote for doing something that would really impact these women. I had seen women that had come to know the Lord, and they couldn't make it because they didn't have the support systems that they needed. And so that's kind of how we started doing that. Now, recently, just this year, we are looking at, again, with the city, doing an emergency shelter. So we're hoping they're looking at possibly giving us the use of a building to do it, and we're looking at doing that again. But my goal would be able to use that as kind of a clearinghouse where people come into that, and then if we have a men's home as well, we can direct people that are really serious into programs where they can really make lasting changes. So that's kind of how we see it working long term. Uh-huh.
You stated that in a transitional home, that these women are all in recovery, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You also stated that they're in programs from 9 to 4, is that right?
Classes.
Classes. Mm-hmm. Outside, kind of a two-part question, outside of the those time frames, are they required to be in any kind of programs, and or are they offered any AA, NA, or Celebrate Recovery?
Did you go to Celebrate Recovery?
Is there one here?
No. The closest one is up in Granite Bay, so it's about a 30-minute drive. Remington too, but all of them are about a 20-30 minute drive. But they do that. They can go to NA or AA meetings once they are out of their 30-day blackout. And if they have a sponsor, even during their 30 days, they can do that. But we do a program called Genesis Relapse Prevention Counseling, which the reason we chose that is because NA and AA programs have a 80% relapse rate, which means 80% of the people that go through those programs end up relapsing. Genesis program has a 20% relapse rate, and it goes much deeper into why they do the things that they do. So we use that as a one-on-one counseling, but we do both. Because I think the biggest thing that Celebrate Recovery and NA and AA have to offer is the community. That once they leave here, if they're not hooked up with the recovery community, they have a hard time sustaining recovery because they need to be involved in that. So we really see the importance of that and work on that as well. And then in the times that they're not in classes, they're still living in community. So we, you know, if they're in a, like, Asia, you'll meet, she has a job, she'll be leaving a lot, but she's been here, a year and a half. So she's definitely far along in her recovery. But initially, you know, they start out with a pass to be able to go to the store. They work up to, you know, a pass to be able to be gone for the whole day, then an overnight pass, and they grow in their freedom. And then if they relapse, we have a meeting where we talk about what happened, who did they hang out with, you know, what choices did they make, how can we build a better plan next time so that they won't make the same mistake. So we're very much focused on learning from mistakes. We're not a punishing kind of program. We don't kick anybody out. People choose to leave. And, we see relapse as an opportunity to learn. What did you learn from that? Okay, well, I learned that when I go out with this friend, this is what I do. So I guess from now on, I won't do that unless I bring somebody with me. And, you know, so.
Yeah. So the women, they can, like, you know, run away here if they're, like, getting beat at home or whatever, like, to come find a safe place?
Good question. They can, as long as they're not in a relationship where we're concerned that that person might pursue them here and make it unsafe for the other women.
So if, like, the husband or the boyfriend or whatever doesn't know where this is at, like, but they know where it's at, is it, like, yeah, why they can run away too?
Typically, we'll take them, like, if they're out of state, because a lot of times women will flee the state and then come here, and then we have taken women like that. Or if he's locked up in prison, then we will. But if he's here locally and he's looking for her, then we would encourage her to go somewhere like Weed that has secret locations, because it would be too easy for him to find her here, and we don't want to put all the rest of the women in danger and the children that we have. So yeah. We do have a number of the women that have come into our program have had husbands that are in prison, and a number of them have had domestic violence situations as well. I'm excited. I think it's going to be fun.
Thank you very much.
Hope we didn't scare you too much. any of the parents of these kids? Would you be like ready to take your...
Well, we're going to be technical about it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, good. Well, we're really excited. And we love Jackson. And he knew somewhat what he was bringing in too, so...
Any last questions for Nancy before we let her go?
I'm going to fall asleep on this.
You'll be around though this week?
I will be, yes. And in fact, I want to come. I know we'll bring Emily tomorrow night to the program and kind of try to connect as much as we can. So, yeah. And then Josh is a wealth of information too, so. This is what happened to him. You know, he was sit on my lap while I would go into these houses and see what God did with him. And now he's an amazing guy because, you know, and I don't know how many of you guys have been raised in Christian families, but I think sometimes when you are, I know I was raised in a Christian family, and I always wanted one of those really cool testimonies, you know, of the person that was on drugs or whatever, you know, and it really bothers me that I didn't have that. But I just want to encourage you that God can really use you. And even though I don't have that, God's used me. And Josh was raised in a Christian home, but being involved in this environment, he learned the street culture without having to participate in all the yucky stuff they were involved in. And so now he relates really, really well with the kids out there. He can relate to the church, but he can also relate to the street culture. And so I want to encourage you that God can do that. As you learn to minister in these kind of environments, you're really growing the opportunities that God can use you. So I hope that you can see that you don't have to have been a drug addict. You don't have to have tattoos. What they're looking for is people that are real and honest. If you really love them and you're real and you're honest, you know what? It's okay. You don't have to be able to relate to the things that they've gone through, but every one of you have had things in your life that are painful. And times in your life where God has rescued you or he's shown his love to you, you have something to say. And, you know, you just be honest and open.
Thank you so much. If you guys can help me thank Nancy.
Thank you. Taking your vacation to do this. It's awesome.
It's free to work, too.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, right. We're going to Eagle Lake this time of the year.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Right.
Good. Thanks again.
Thank you.
So this is what we're going to do next, guys. We're going to go ahead and we're going to go grab all our stuff out of the van. We're going to start off just putting all our stuff in the back of the room next door. Okay? So if you guys can help unload, and as soon as it's all unloaded, I'll tell you what we're doing next.
Hey, Jackson, if you need me, I have a mile away. So I always have my cell phone.
Hey, yo, Jim. Nice to meet you. You guys took the scaffolding and you just volunteered for a week?
Whatever you want to go to.
I'm a parent. Okay.
Volunteer.
All right. Cool.
I'm a staff. Okay.
Yeah, I'm the local director of Prison Fellowship. And Nancy's husband. And we're going to be up there more aggressively trying to talk to the churches in Susanville because we're going to start a Christian dorm in the prison next fall. And we're looking for churches to partner with us to come in and do, well, they already have some recovery pretty strong in the prison, but other programs like that. And disciple the guys for a year and a half before they go home. So maybe I'll give my card before the end of the week. I'll be around all week too. Is it near town, outside of town?
Right on Main Street.
Okay, cool.
2410 Main Street.
Okay. Yeah, I get up there pretty regularly. We're just putting stuff together. We're going to start in September. We've been talking about it for a while. We do a similar program in Vacaville. I see it at California State Prison Salon. And, yeah, so we've been doing it all over the country. It really works. So guys don't go back. We try to catch them before they go home. And so that they're disciples. You know, when they get out, it's still a good time to catch them. But sometimes they're starting from scratch and rather have the work with them for 18, 24 months before they go home. Very intentionally. So they're going to give us a dorm at CCC, at California Correctional Center. Yeah. And we used to be working, I've been with PF for 15 years, and we used to work with the churches up there, and for whatever reason, you guys are a little bit further away than some of our places. So we're going to bring a team from Redding, a team from Reno, and we also need to build a team right there.
Because they got all the Celebrate Recovery books online. You can just write your own.
Well, they've got a big program inside there. Are you doing CR too?
I mean, championship team.
Okay. Cool. Okay, good.
I'm pretty plugged in.
Do you go to Saddleback for their annual conferences?
Not yet. They just sent some, you know, and hopefully next time that's God's will.
Okay. Well, great to meet you. I'll probably give you my card before then.
Okay, cool. What's your name again?
Rick.
Pleasure to meet you, sir.
Bless you. Jack, I don't know if you remember me. I'm Nancy Sutherland-Rick.
That's right.
It's cool. Very good. I was just telling her, I didn't know you were in Susanville. I was asking her. She says, Hickey's in Oroville. So you're up in Susanville.
Yeah.
We're starting a Christian dorm at the California Correctional Center in September with 32 men. So we're trying to get some traction with some of the Susanville churches. Years ago, we had a much better relationship. And then it's kind of out a little bit out of people's radar screens. But it's one of my churches with prison, or one of my prisons with prison fellowship that I work with. So I'm going to come up and see you guys here pretty soon.
That'd be so much fun.
Yeah, well, you guys don't have to do it, but you can help me get connected with some of the churches up there that might be interested. Maybe your church would be interested.
Probably.
Obviously, the young people couldn't go in, but yeah, it's really a phenomenal opportunity. We're doing it in Solano, and we disciple the guys for 18 to 24 months before they leave. So they do self-recovery, they do all the stuff that we do on the outside, and they get them ready.
Okay.
And it's only 32 guys. We're not trying to change the whole prison. Yeah. Kind of like Jesus. We're just, and kind of like you guys. We're a small group. So I'll give you my card before the end of the week, and I'm going to be up there. I get up there, you know, six times a year, so I'll come see you. We'll go have coffee or have a meal and stay connected. All right?
Great.
Thank you guys for coming.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for
little one.
I'm excited.
All right. I'll be around.